Patriot Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next.
Here on a Football Friday, reunion of Super Bowl 43, Pittsburgh and Arizona. We're brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand, the brand vets recommend most for dog safety and freedom. Steelers and the Arizona Cardinals this weekend, guys, and Mike Vick Part 2.
Tim will be in the end zone again for the winning touchdown.
Yes, he will be.
Posing.
Tim may have the real football there, as Santonio Holmes doesn't realize whether he or Ben Roethlisberger has the authentic ball, apparently, per Joe Stark.
Oh, is that in Joe's column today?
Yeah, yeah. They're not sure who has the real one.
Oh, Santonio sold it for dope. Who are we kidding? Come on.
Steelers are 3-2, guys, and they've got a 4-1 football team coming in here this weekend. Do you feel good about their chances? We're going to pick this game later in the show, but is this team that they're facing this weekend, the 4-1 Cardinals, really as good as their record says they are? I think to my question, and Tim, you were over listening to Todd Haley, the Steelers play caller, yesterday. How aggressive do they need to be? Because, boy, listening to Haley, it sounds like they're going to be ultra-conservative again. Same old from the last couple of weeks of really just no mistakes from Mike Vick.
And yet he insists that they're not being conservative, because I spun to him the same conversation we were having from what Ramon Foster had said, and then some of the other wide receivers, Antonio Brown among them, confirmed, which was they were running deep a lot. It's just Michael didn't take the shots or didn't see the shots that were open. But yes, I expect them to try to win the game in a similar manner that they won the game against San Diego, because you know, part of what makes this offense go, it's not dink and dunk, but it's also not busted down the field. It's Roethlisberger with a lot of outs, Roethlisberger with a lot of deep ends, and the wide receivers running after the catch, and they just don't trust Michael Vick, nor should they, to throw those balls with precision to the point that you're hitting the receiver in stride or waiting for him to come out of the break like he tends to do instead of throwing the ball before they come out of the break. These are issues. These are where the gaps occur in the offense, the way it's structured for the starting quarterback and this backup quarterback.
Okay, well, is he doing a good job, guy? Because he won a game with Vic. Talking about
Haley. Well, I think as long as, well, regardless of what he wants to term it, whether it's conservative or not, I would imagine the way they view it, Ken, is that they stayed within a touchdown of San Diego the whole time. Don't gamble. We saw in last year how he jumped on the Steelers early as a quarterback, as the Jets quarterback,
right,
and then didn't do much the rest of the game. I think as long as they're not going to gamble too much with him, because he's been prone his whole career to turn the football over, fumbles and interceptions, even when he was playing for the Eagles and was one of the better quarterbacks in the league. So I think you try to keep it close, and if you have to gamble, you gamble late, although I would think they're a little more comfortable with opening things up and letting him play the way that he can based on what he did on the final two drives in San Diego.
He's one pass and one drive away from this whole city saying, this guy stinks, why did we bother signing this jerk?
Or from being 2-0 as a starter.
Oh, he's already won you one game. That's why you signed him. I mean, you know.
But I mean, seriously, though, if he doesn't, those last two drives, one play, one drive of the fourth, and people are saying, this guy stinks, we never should have brought him on board in the first place.
And more Landry Jones calls.
Right.
Well, here's what Haley said as you asked him about that conservative nature or lack of being conservative. And that includes the running game, too, to me, Tim. He ran once. It was a good run.
Yeah.
If he can't throw, if he's erratic throwing, right, then maybe you should design
some
run.
Is that just because Landry Jones is on deck and you don't want to get him hurt from running?
Yeah, right. They act like they want to have a real offense with this quarterback, but part of the real offense with this quarterback would be allowing him to run. But they're so paranoid about that, and they're so paranoid about him getting hurt. Like, they're so conservative with him because they don't trust him, but they're also so paranoid with him that they don't want him to get hurt because the next option is even worse.
Right.
Isn't that weird?
Very weird. Mike Vick is a running quarterback. He
right.
always has been. He always will be as long as he survives in the league. So to strip that away from him out of fear just does not seem logical.
He's not trustworthy enough. So let's rein in the offense, but we can't have him get hurt because the next option is so very bad. What do you do with that?
Here's Haley on their offense to this point with Vic.
No way being conservative or playing not to lose. I mean, we're throwing the football. He's just got to throw it to where it's supposed to go, and we do our best from a game planning standpoint to put one of our best players in AB in the spots to have a chance. The coverage can still say no.
Now, he's saying he's got to throw it where we call it. There are a few times, obviously, and Haley's got to be dead aware of this, that he just couldn't throw it where we called it to. So you can hope that he gets better after his third week of practice. Maybe there is something to that. Maybe he'll get on a better timing with his receivers. But
at some point, you can't blame his play on not being here long enough. At some point, where he is. And where he is a guy who's in the later stages of his playing career, whose better days are behind him, and you just hope he can provide you enough of a spark to keep your head above water for a rapidly healing Ben Roethlisberger. If he pulls out a win this week, too, I think you've gotten more out of him than you can expect. And to go to your original question, I do think Arizona's a little – I'm not saying they're a bad football team, but I like teams – I like the fact that the Steelers are home and that they have been away from their home now for a couple of weeks. They may have stayed here in the East, but I don't know that – that still is an unfamiliar, even at Greenbrier, an unfamiliar scene.
Have you been to Greenbrier?
I have seen pictures.
Beautiful.
I'd love to go there.
I've never been to Greenbrier, no.
Arians and the boys hanging out down there.
We stayed at Boomies once on 51 for a weekend, but the pool was closed.
Maybe they'll send Antonio Brown to Greenbrier for the week if he keeps squawking. Sounded like Haley didn't really... Do you buy this, Tim, that he wasn't aware of the Brown?
Well,
complaints?
He probably doesn't follow your Twitter feed and probably only follows Burt Lawton's.
With the partial full transcript.
Right, so that's where he gets the full news is from the Steeler PR department. If you just rely on your own PR department to get the news, you aren't going to get the real news, as we found out yesterday. But, yeah, it was pretty clear that Todd Haley, when I asked him yesterday about whether or not he felt that A.B. was right in calling for the ball more. He said, why is A.B. calling for the ball more? Here, listen to this reaction.
Is Antonio right? Should he be getting the ball more?
Is Antonio right? Why is he asking for the ball more?
Yeah.
Last week, did he get the ball enough? Yeah, we won.
That is beautiful.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, and including your, yeah.
He kept going down that path, too, and then he kind of followed up and extrapolated that answer from not much to a little bit more about not much, which is we won, so that's enough.
Could he possibly not know that Antonio Brown complained for 10 minutes about not getting the ball the day before?
I suppose it's possible, yes, if he really didn't watch any local sportscast and didn't put ESPN on.
Isn't that Burt Lawton's job to tell him if...
Yes, see, that's where the gap is. Now, the funny thing is, Ken, I saw him after that.
Burt.
No. I saw Todd after that, after the press conference was over, and I walked upstairs, and we're walking to the bathroom at the same time, and I said, hey, I'm sorry I sprung that on you if you really didn't know. And he said, yeah, I didn't know. But, yes, you would figure that before the offensive coordinator has one weekly gathering with the press, it might be wise for the folks in the media relations department to say, hey, you know AB said he wants the ball more, right?
Or at least Snoop to keep him in the loop somehow.
Yeah, go online and catch a vibe. Maybe he doesn't follow Snoop on Twitter either.
I thought he did. I thought they were boys now. Here's more on Vic and Antonio Brown and whether Vic should be listening to Antonio asking for the ball more.
Mike needs to continue progressing in his comfort level of things we're trying to get done. And I think if at an early stage you start worrying about other things other than making the read you're supposed to make, that mistakes will occur. And again, I think Mike has done a tremendous job to this point in putting us in position to have a chance to win two games. We got one of them. Not just AB, it's Heath and throwing the ball to Le'Veon and throwing the ball to Martavis, who he hadn't thrown any balls to until here this week. So, it's a group growth.
Let's translate that soundbite. I didn't hear anything about AB calling for the ball, and I sure as hell hope Vic didn't either. But unfortunately,
well,
Vic
I think it's
did.
A worry, yeah.
And I'm Vic sure is Vic aware did. Of it because AB said a lot of it directly to Vic, as we well know by now. Here's one guarantee for Sunday. A guarantee for Sunday's game is Vic will throw at least one interception trying to force the ball to Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I can see that too. Patrick Peterson, pick six.
I'm telling you, early on Monday night, I thought he was already looking for him first and foremost. And I think it hurt him on some plays. Even without throwing an interception, he's not looking anywhere else.
The near interceptions, were those thrown to Brown? There were like three of them, weren't there? Where they threw
at least
over there.
One. At least I remember one was. I think one was to Bell, one was to Brown. I don't remember the other one.
Okay. Now, bad news yesterday from a guy we knew wasn't going to play in this game anyway, but a setback for Maurkice Pouncey.
Hey, before we go there, can we bring up the other guy who pulled an AB this week, and just for the sake of compare and contrast, see which one we like better, or which wide receiver
another NFL diva receiver?
Yeah. How about Sammy Watkins yesterday in Buffalo? You're making me look bad. Instead of just, trust me, I'll make plays for you, you're making me look bad. Here's what Sammy Watkins said in Buffalo. I need the ball at least 10 times. I need 10 targets, and I'll be fine with however many yards I get. And that's what I addressed in talking with my agent. We reached out to a couple people and tried to pull some strings like, hey, I need my targets. You came up to draft me, and I'm not getting my targets. That's a problem.
Isn't he hurt?
You're making me look bad. You're making yourself look bad. Why not make both of us look good? See, Sammy's just working with the front office and the coaching staff here, Ken. Everybody looks at you, and you get zero catches, 0 yards. But when you look on film, 90% of the time you're open. I understand that these guys are young and that they need some time to trust me, meaning the quarterbacks up there. Once we get that trust, it'll be different. That's why I get mad. When I don't get looked at, I can look at film and all eyes go straight that way, meaning the other way, and I'm not looked at all. That's when I get frustrated. When I have one-on-one coverage go to me, I don't care what's going on over there. I don't care if he's open. When I get one-on-one, just target me.
This is a young guy who's not even going to get a new contract in 3 years. How is he Jerry Maguire already in year number two? Plus, he's hurt. He can't even get on the field. Some of these receivers are incredible.
They must come into the league.
It really is. In this position, they come into the league and they must get expected. It'll feel like they're expected to be whiny right out of the gate.
Well, the big thing is, if he's Rod Tidwell, to finish your analogy, he really is going to Jerry Maguire because he's got his agent involved. He's got his agent calling the team.
Well, you think about most positions in general. I mean, the guys, like, we all know Hines Ward had. Yeah, was full of crap a lot of times too with his stuff, but the guy blocked and was involved in plays. Most receivers do very little if they don't get the ball other than run their routes. Fullbacks, tight ends, other guys who occasionally get the ball but don't get it regularly have other duties. They feel like they're contributing. So receivers by nature, if you've been a receiver all your life, if you're not getting the ball thrown to you, you don't feel like you're doing it.
They're running around, their hands up and open them up.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're playing flag football with your buddies or whatever, if you're playing receiver and you are open and the guy didn't throw to you, you get pissed.
No, I was open all night last night.
I never got the ball. Position. It's part of the position.
What, you played flag football?
At a flag game last night.
It develops your personality.
I went straight Sammy Watkins a couple times on the sideline.
You should have called yourself on the radio and complained.
Tim, first-time caller.
I'll hang up
and listen. That's funny. It probably is true, but don't make excuses for these guys because it's just going to encourage it more. But you're right. I understand what you're saying. The Pouncey setback, though, and I think this gets involved with the offense and how aggressive they can be with Vic a little bit. Our Steelers beat reporter, Mark Cabali, has been pretty hard on Cody Wallace the last couple Steelers roundtable shows. He thinks he's not playing very well at all in his duties at backup center. Do you agree with that, first of all, Mark's premise that Wallace has struggled with
a little bit? I thought Wallace was better early than he has been of late.
I guess I remember
I
him
haven't,
in the I first
don't sit
couple
there and
weeks.
Watch the center. And,
I just know that Ingram had a lot of penetration.
If Mark is watching him for the purpose of watching him, and that's what he says, I have great trust in Mark's football and all that he's right, but I'm not sitting there watching the center.
I know I just look at how the other guys in the interior of the defensive line have done against the Steelers, and Ingram flashed on a couple of occasions. What's that guy's name? Zadarius
Smith
from the Ravens had those back-to-back sacks. Those were both, I think, both on him.
Were they up the middle?
I think they were both up the middle.
Around.
At least one was right up the middle.
There was one this week where Wallace went to help the left guard, and then the guy looped around and came through the middle, which was vacated.
So was that Ingram?
It might have been Ingram. That's when he hit. Yeah, that's right. He hit Vic pretty good up the gut.
Well, Ingram was in there a lot. Ingram was in the backfield as often as Le'Veon Bell was.
So that's not getting beat physically. It's like a mental thing. It's like I'm not picking it up.
How about against Aaron Donald as the second half wore along?
Well, Aaron Donald.
All right.
Well, you're not going to replace a Pro Bowl caliber guy with a backup and get the same amount of play. Now, there's a difference between not playing like Maurkice Pouncey and stinking. There's certainly lots of space in between there. And I don't think that they have been particularly bad as an offensive line as a group. That's why I wouldn't sit there and watch him. If they started giving up tons of sacks or were looking terrible like the offensive line did not too many years ago, then you might point a finger. So
Yeah, I thought he was fine the rest of the opener. I thought he was pretty good against San Francisco and for the start of the St. Louis game. But since the start of the St. Louis game, he's looked like a guy who shouldn't be starting. He looks like a backup.
Yeah, that said, Le'Veon Bell's had some yards. I mean, they're 1-1 here the last 2 weeks. Let's listen into what Haley said about Cody Wallace and his play.
I think he's done a terrific job, but I'm not surprised by it. Like I said, when Pouncey went down and you all were asking, you know, how are you going to function, you know, that Cody had been with us 2 years ago and played a big part in us being one of the better offenses the second half of that year. So he's here for a reason. I love the way he goes about his business. I mean, you to find him, you just got to look for the last guy hitting after the whistle, and it's usually him. So he's smart. He's done a great job, whether it was Ben in there or now Mike, of handling a lot of issues. So that's what you're looking for.
Well, it's great if he's still hitting after the whistle and he's been pushed back into the backfield and Le'Veon Bell has lost 2 yards.
He's our Matt Cook.
Hey, look, that was some revisionist history there from Haley. It wasn't people coming to him and saying, oh my God, Marquise Pouncey is out. How are you going to function? It's Pouncey, Bell, Bryant, all the guys on offense that were either hurt or suspended. That's what people were coming to him about and saying, how are you going to function? It was the loss of the collective, not just Pouncey.
Yeah. I would assume from this, we don't know for sure, but he'd be done for the year, right, Pouncey?
It doesn't sound like he's coming back, yeah.
Marcus Gilbert tells our Ralph Paulk, I've been talking with him about the injury. Obviously, he's hurting because he'd like to be out there with us winning games. We feed off his injury. We feed off his injury? But he has to go see a few doctors pretty soon. Then this weekend, he'll come up with a decision. He's taking the same approach, the smart approach, to meet with the doctor in North Carolina. So they're going to have a decision this weekend, basically, is what Marcus Gilbert spilled. But doesn't look good, so get ready for Cody Wallace and Doug Legursky for the rest of the year as your backup O-line, which did take him to a Super Bowl once, backup parts. Didn't win that Super Bowl.
How do they like you now, O-line?
Who's laughing now? In terms of injuries, it's the Morning Sports Report here on Trib Live Radio, and we're brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand. We've helped over 2 million pets enjoy more freedom in their yard so owners can relax and not worry about them running away. You know, you get the free in-home consultation at InvisibleFence.com. It's been a week of the chronically injured to keep being injured. The Pouncey setback, Bo Bennett, your best player out last night. But without Bo Bennett, the Penguins win a game. Hallelujah. And they score 2 and give up none. 2-0 win over the Ottawa Senators last night. How important was this one from a don't fire the coach point of view?
I said,
well, that's a good question.
For October, it was a must-win, I think.
What does 0-3 to 0-4 translate into once you become 1-3 instead of 0-4?
Like, don't know.
You know, for him getting fired with the 0-4 threshold of Ivan Linka, the dearly departed, as we remember,
R.I.P.
Ken, Ivan Linka. If that's the threshold, 0-4, what does 1-3 then translate into? 1-6, 1-7? Do you have to lose 4 in a row somewhere along the way before Thanksgiving to get canned?
We're in uncharted territory now.
What's the slide rule look like here? Help me out.
2-8, I think you're gone.
2-8, okay, all right.
10-game sample? That's like
the bigger issues are still there. I mean, it's not. I'm not going to do a cartwheel because they beat a team that traveled and played the night before. That team was ripe for the picking last
night.
Boy,
did they look like they had, too, on a lot of occasions, didn't they?
Sidney Crosby doesn't have a point. They don't have a power play goal. I mean, what's going on here?
Power play looked better, but still didn't produce.
Yeah, they've, you know,
they had a two-man advantage for over a minute and didn't
score. Yeah, that's true. That was not better.
They have at times, though, Guy, and I thought that two-man advantage was part of it because Sid got stuffed on what was a nice setup for him on that two-man advantage. We know what their power play looks like when it looks like shit, right? I mean, it's just like they're erratic getting into the zone.
Can't even get in the zone.
You know, they're so spread out, and the passes are getting deflected. It's constantly out of the zone, back in the zone. I mean, they've at least had puck possession, moved the puck with an idea, and gotten shots. I think that...
So you're saying it's a moral victory.
Yes. Yes, I am. This is a Pitt Panther at Iowa moral victory for the Penguin power play. I think that the power play largely has been with a plan, with a purpose. It hasn't been lackluster. There haven't been momentum-sapping power plays like we've come to know. I feel like their power play has been close more than I think it's been bad.
Well, you know what? People hate, oh, we ran into a hot goaltender. That's too. Both goalies in their first two games played over their head. They did, I think, run into a little bad luck there.
But you know what? Like, on the first power play, Hornquist had a great chance. Anderson stuck the left pad out, and I don't know if you remember that. He's trying to wrap it around. But is that on Anderson for a great save, or does Hornquist need to elevate the puck there? I mean,
well, Sid probably needed to elevate the puck too more on the one where he got stuffed.
Exactly. And it's easy to say that as the armchair quarterback, so to speak, but, you know, you want to beat these guys, you're going to have to put a Geno Malkin shot on every now and then.
Well, that's sort of the point that I'm making with the power play, is that for once it almost looks like it's well-schooled and efficient and well-coached, and it's just the lack of talent that's making it unproductive. They're just not finishing. They're not cashing in, and that's where their talent is supposed to be the story. And we've always bitched about their power play because it's overthought, it's predictable as to where they go. They make too many passes. They try to make it look too pretty. But when they've managed to, in those times, set up the puck and properly get an open shot on goal, they bury it.
Yeah.
Now they're just not burying the chances that they create through what looks like a well-thought-out design.
Okay. Now, I kind of agree with you on that. But if that's the case, by the way, Malkin talked after the game last night and said to some effect that, you got to give us time. They just put me back with Sid. You know, basically said we got
right, because for the last 8 years that
it was their first day together.
First 8 years were warming up for this, and then they hit a little road bump because they were set apart for two games.
They had Kessel and Letang at the point on the first one, with Hornquist, Sid, and Geno. Malkin down at the goal line though, which was weird. It's weird to see him that low. I mean, you think of him as like, you know, the point guy. Then he eventually did come back out on top on the second one, I think. I don't know if you buy that a little bit, or just in general, people were saying, you got to give this team time, you got to let them breathe a little bit, it's all new combination, Sid and Kessel have only played together less than 10 games, patience. Yeah, to a certain extent, they needed results though last night, and they needed to win, and they at least got that done.
Yeah, that's the most important part, but I don't think they're immediately out of the woods or on the right track now, and we were talking yesterday about how the rest of the division has kind of stunk and gotten off to a slow start. That's helped keep them. Well, last night everybody won, except the Rangers. But Capitals won. I think the Islanders won last night. I'm trying to think of the other
sport. Ovechkin showed up. He didn't oversleep. Nice by him. They get a goal from Daniel Sprong as well, and they made some pretty bold lineup changes. I got to give Johnston credit for that. Pretty ballsy when you're 0-3 to be benching Scuderi and putting a couple new guys in the lineup. Clendenning makes his debut last night on defense. They bump Sprong up to line 3.
I don't know how hard it is to bench Scuderi anymore.
I think it is when you're 0-3. Well, maybe not. I mean, but it was a. Don't you think it was a desperation sort of change of?
Yeah, it was pace? Desperation, but it shouldn't be that hard to bench Scuderi. My point is, they should have benched Scuderi more times recently.
Yeah, it wasn't Sean Rodriguez playing first. Yeah, maybe. I think he could still be a good like seventh defenseman for you. That, you know, it'd be nice to have around in a pinch.
Because you've already got Gonchar as your 6.5, right? Because they're still going back and getting Gonchar.
Do you want to go back to the power play being 0-for-12? Do you want to go back to the Laird plan looking good right now?
Again, though, you just agreed with me that how they were setting up the power play wasn't the problem. Yep. It was finishing on the power play.
I mean,
shorthanded. Sid had a chance to finish shorthanded as well. He had a glorious 2-on-1 shorthanded chance that he shot into Anderson.
Yeah. Gonchar had a different power play approach. Like, I mean, he would just middle of the point, just bomb those things away, and we'd get great deflections in front. They don't have that going for them right now, but I agree with you. That it does seem like their scheme and setup is fine. They're getting chances. They're just not finishing.
Well, I'll take that for another game or two. It has to start with some results.
Yeah. But anyway, back to...
I just don't get it. I don't understand how a team... Look, this team has its flaws. Offensive talent's not one of them. How it can't produce with a two-man advantage. A two-man advantage doesn't need scheme. You don't need scheme to score with a two-man advantage. You have two people out there uncovered at all times.
I mean, I was talking to some people in the press box last night, and nobody denied that Johnston's job was on the line. If they didn't win last night or in the next couple, maybe he would have survived 0-4, but 0-5 to Toronto, you probably are out at 0-5, right? You don't trade for Phil Kessel to win next year. You're trading to win this year. So I guess my question is, do you like what Johnston did in terms of at least the line tinkering last night? And was he partly responsible for that?
I don't think he can. I think that's just such minor hockey minutiae that everybody...
Well, Sprong played more minutes and he scored a goal.
Yeah, changing guys on the third and fourth line. If you've started 0-3 and you don't make any changes, you're an idiot.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with... I don't think benching Scuderi was that hard. Plotnikov... You know, in theory, I would prefer that Plotnikov stay out there because you're trying to figure out what he is. And if confidence and getting used to the NHL game was an issue for him early on, as Johnston said it was, and then you thought he was fitting in better on the third line, why'd he take him off the third line right away? I mean, this is somebody you actively wanted to seek, get, and bring in, and now you're already benching him for, you know, guys like Porter and Rust. And I know that Porter and Rust both did good things last night, particularly Porter helping to set up Sprong. Yes, Sprong being elevated, that's definitely good by me. That's something I was calling for after game one. I have no idea why you brought him here and gave him one shift in the debut.
Right.
Like, that made no sense. So, yes.
It could have been a sign that he's feeling the heat himself. I better do something here. I might be out. I got to make some changes. I can't be patient with this group. Even if I believe in this group, I can't be patient with them right now.
Well, good. You know, time to start pushing some buttons and making this team feel uneasy a little bit.
You know, the other thing about that 5-on-3 that you brought up, Guy, they were lucky to get it.
Oh,
that was a bad call.
That was a bad call.
Why can't you reverse that? Why can't you replay that?
They should.
That's one of they put these coaches challenges in. That's an easy one to do. Simple.
Yeah.
And they're limited as they are in what you can and can't challenge.
What can they challenge now? They can challenge.
You can challenge a goal that's the direct result of an offsides.
The offsides is the big one, right? Or the goalie interference.
Goalie interference you can challenge. I think you can challenge.
Which they did in a preseason game, right?
So, yeah, I think
they had a
challenge
against them.
A puck going off a stick and over the boards, but not in the neutral zone. Like, they're judging that it was in the neutral zone. That you can't challenge. But I thought you could challenge the puck going off the stick or off the glass or being shot cleanly. But they were challenging where the puck was. That, I guess, you can't challenge.
Well, are you saying which penalty did you think was poor? Because the delay of game, I wasn't sure. But the first one I'm talking about where Cullen, they called Erickson for, like, interference with Cullen. I thought Cullen reached around and
grabbed him. I'm talking about where he flipped out. The Ottawa coach flipped out, and rightfully so, because the puck was in the neutral zone.
It was the neutral zone,
not in the defensive end.
Well, I thought they were both questionable. So, should you be able to challenge any call, I guess, is the question.
Well, that's been my thing in baseball or in football and anything. If you're going to use replay, if it can overturn. Now, obviously, there are some places you can't. The Shamarco Thomas kick fumble return should have counted, but if the whistle blows, you can't go back and say, well, the same thing with runners on base. If you go back and change a call, it's very difficult to decide how far a certain run. Well, this guy's fast. He would have made it home. You know. So there are.
That's a good point. Back to the Shamarco play. We didn't even talk about that after the game.
What?
Shamarco Thomas recovered the fumble. Nobody touched him.
And he returned it, and they said he was down by contact.
We talked about that.
They blew the whistle. I don't think we did.
Yeah, we did, because we're talking about the great Sarah Thomas who blew the whistle.
Oh, okay. Maybe we lumped it in there. But that's a huge play. But I guess you're right, Guy. You can't then go back and say he would have scored.
I'm saying that you can't make it a blanket, but anything
that stops the action of the play.
Yeah, and I don't mean that you start reviewing every. See, I don't like what's happened in baseball where, the umpires can call a review or the manager can. No. The coach or the manager should have his certain amount, one a period, one a game, one a half, whatever sport you're watching. And anything that could be fixed by the review should be fixable.
Well,
why on our only scoring plays, only change of possession? It should be anything that is blatantly wrong on the video should be overturned.
So you don't like the fact that baseball allows the out of the
The umpires can call a review if you've already used yours or
like the seventh
last
and eighth
three innings.
Inning.
Right.
You don't like that?
I don't.
See, I do. I would prefer that Major League Baseball or the umpires have the right to check on something. If a 50-50 bang-bang play at first base occurs in the third, and you challenge and you're wrong, that really shouldn't be, you can be penalized, you can't challenge again, but if you get robbed in the seventh or eighth inning, I want the ability for the umpires to go back and fix it.
But what I don't like about it, Tim, is there are instances where I think they should look at it and they don't. So why do they get to pick and choose what's reviewable?
Okay,
and
that's
what I don't like. You know,
But like in football, the two minutes in, they can review anything. They can buzz down, and they usually do.
Yeah.
In football, they usually do. Now in hockey, it's a different animal because of the continuous nature of the game.
Yeah.
Baseball stops every pitch.
That's
football
true.
Stops every snap. You can stop and study something. So it's a different animal for hockey. But I think anything that stops the game, stops the flow, like a penalty, you should be able to challenge.
Well, this offside thing.
Not a judgment call. I don't want a judgment call on a hook or a judgment call on a hold.
You don't want that?
No, judgment calls, I agree. You know, you can't argue with everyone. Go back and look. Well, he really kind of slowed. No, those shouldn't ever be.
What about like a high stick where you get stick by your own guy or something like that?
And they call a penalty. That's different. That's not a judgment.
That's right or wrong.
Okay. But in that penalty where...
Which is why balls or strikes should never be reviewed. Because that's a judgment, and it would still be a judgment on the review.
All right, I guess I could buy that. But I don't know if you guys are aware of the NHL thing. If they go to a review now, they go to Toronto, but it's still the officials on the ice that make the call. It's not like in baseball where they're waiting for a judgment to come down. They'll like get help from some from this third party, but eventually it's just going to come down to the guys on the ice who made the call anyway, which is, I think, total BS. Because then the inherent bias of the call anyway, these guys don't want to look dumb. They're going to be more...
Well, where are they looking now then?
In the NHL?
Yeah.
They put the headsets on. I don't think they look at all. They listen to Toronto, and Toronto says, here's what we're seeing. We think maybe this, but it's up to you. And so, you know, it's still going to be the guy who made
Toronto the... Toronto makes the call on a goal, don't they?
They do on the goal stuff, but
not on the
challenge.
They should do the same thing here.
Yeah, they should. But that's not the way I understand it's going so far. So it's like a weird, all right, we'll go
review it.
That's
the first I've heard of that. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I just...
Wait till it happens. There'll be a challenge on a goalie interference. They're going to go and put the headsets on. They'll go and listen, and then they'll come back. But it's the officials on the ice that still make the final judgment of.
Well, then let them put their head under a hood like the stupid NFL refs. Then, like, go over, have the equipment by where the Zamboni comes in, skate over, look at it, or have it in the penalty boxes, something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, Daniel Sprong scores a goal last night, too. One of the big stories, he celebrated like Cozy Bautista throwing the bat after his home run, jumping into the glass. Johnston sort of gave him some praise, but also after the game said he needs to fine-tune his 200-foot game.
Of course
basically.
He does, yes. Guy that can do great things in the offensive end, let's worry more about what he does or doesn't do in the neutral zone. That's typical.
It's a good question. Like,
let's lose another 2-1 game instead of winning 2-0.
That's what makes me question the identity of this team and whether Johnston knows what he wants or they should be.
Bylsma did the same stuff, though, and he was allegedly an offensive coach. This is just a culture in hockey. It's not
to
just
beat down young guys?
To beat down the young guys.
I guess I can understand that. Sort of. You know, you don't want a guy to get too... his ego to go run wild early and develop bad habits. I'm sure they want him to have good habits.
Kessel? Kessel got that from Julian. Seguin got that from Julian. Spooner got that from Julian. You know what I mean? Like, you see this from coaches all over the place. They just don't want to trust young guys. And it's always, they overemphasize what they're not doing from the offensive blue line back and underappreciate what they do from the offensive blue line in.
Tell us what you have seen from the Penguins here through the first four games now. And I go back to our analogy from earlier in the week, Tim. You know, a five-game NHL sample is basically a one-game NFL sample. So they were not quite 0-1 per NFL terms. Now at 1-3, and you got Toronto coming in tomorrow, a team you should beat, although they're the best hockey coach on the planet. We'll see how that goes. But if you go 2-3 for your first five games, you know, all is sort of well. And you've stabilized the ship a little bit. Couple emails on the Penguinos. Chris is first up today. Chris in Boulder. Sidney Crosby is the Penguins' problem right now, guys, and I say that as a huge fan. He seems to be disengaged completely or his skills have eroded to he's merely an average player. Neither his skating nor his shot are remotely close to what they have been in the past. Do you agree with that? He missed a few shots that...
You know what? I've seen so little of them so far because of my traveling and everything. I can't make that judgment. It's just you go back to last regular season. It's five scoreless games in a row now. It ties the longest drought of his career, and he didn't do much in the playoffs. So there's a legitimate question there.
He doesn't skate with the explosion that he used to. I think he's right there. As far as his shot goes, he's never had a great shot in terms of it being all that hard or heavy, but it was always enough to get past the goaltender enough, and it hasn't been so far this year.
Chris also says, Plotnikov goes from Geno's wing to a healthy scratch. Sounds like a panic to me.
Also sounds like a coach who maybe didn't want the free agent Russian coming here. But.
Well, that could be true. Forced on him to placate Geno for a little bit.
Yeah, you're going to put my job on the line, making me play guys I didn't want to play? I'll show you.
All right.
Chris says, I'd like to see them put Sprong and Kessel with Malkin. He was at least involved and engaged in the game last night. Why not give Sprong a real opportunity and see what he can do?
They really need like a 6-1 win, I think. A bunch of guys get some points, like a baseball game where everybody in the starting lineup gets two hits or more. Everybody feels good about themselves and relaxes a little. I'm sure, you know, the not only losing the first three games, but scoring three goals in the first three games total. A lot of guys squeezing a stick. And
yeah, even last night. It's just
well, you
two.
Made the football.
And there's
analogy.
A lot of guys playing, a lot of new guys, too. I mean, it's not going to gel immediately, even if it, you know, even if they are highly skilled.
You made the football analogy before. Maybe this is going to be more like a baseball analogy with the Pirates, where they were 18-22 to start, and then
and
they
McCutcheon's got to say, "I'm sick of 0 for freaking 4." And
yeah, Crosby's got to say, "I'm sick of being freaking minus 1," or whatever.
Not sure Sid's got that in him. Have we ever seen him be that declarative?
He's
or
never gone that long
off?
A period of time to be that angry.
In the playoffs,
Kutch was 5 weeks in.
Yeah. Ben emails, Sprong needs to stay with the club, guys. Not just because he scored, but he's getting consistent chances. They need his youth and enthusiasm, too. Ideally, I'd like to see them move Perron for a decent defenseman.
Perron had one of his best games as a Penguin, I thought, last night. I thought Perron was really good.
He had a bunch of
chances.
And
I can't stand the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know at all personally, but just as a player, I think he's garbage. I think he's a less-than-skilled player and an empty sweater, as I've said on a number of occasions. Yesterday,
he was so streaky.
He just didn't get a puck to go in, but he took five shots. He was their best player, I thought, in the first period last night.
But if he can't finish, what good is he?
You're right. No, you're right. But, I mean, at least he went from not being noticed.
Yeah.
You had to remember. You had to remind yourself he was in uniform to, oh, wow, this guy's coming close. And it felt like he was close all night last night. He was good last night.
Scott emails. He says, the effort was there for the Pens last night, guys, although I don't understand why it takes an 0-3 start to produce that effort. I thought Bonino, Porter, and some role guys had some nice games. And what is Sid's shooting percentage since his wrist injury? It just doesn't seem the same.
I don't know about his shooting percentage, but I agree. It's not been good.
And Scott also says the power play needs fixed. They were top five the last 2 years under Bilesma. No excuse for how bad
they were
it's
terrible
been.
The second half of last year. Oh, under Bilesma, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he said.
But they got off to a great start last year, too. It was
it's like when a guy hits 20 homers in April. And then at the end of the year, he finishes with 35 homers. Like, oh, it's 35 home run guy. Well, yeah. Not so much. We had 20 in the first month.
Jeff says, I think the biggest news of the day, guys, is Pouncey's complications from his surgery. Was it an infection? What was he doing, rolling around in the dirt? A lot of money invested in a guy who can't stay on the field. That and, of course, Shazier's serious, non-serious shoulder injury. Yeah, it looks like Shazier's going to be out again this week. Might be a coach's decision. More than Shazier's decision. But
rolling around in the dirt. I mean, come on. Have you been paying attention to the news about local hospitals and fungus and everything else? I mean, that could, look at the staph infection that almost killed Greg Lloyd.
Yeah.
Don't blame that on the player.
Kill a Chihuahua with a jingle of the day. Prepare yourselves. Cover yourselves with something.
That guy, by the way, that last emailer is never allowed to use the phrase, just get off the ground and rub some dirt on it.
Here's from the Kill a Chihuahua. The Pens get their first win. Hey, it's better than losing. But they didn't look very good, which is hardly amusing. Trying to stay objective, not be a homer or a naysayer. Evaluating the decline of the Pens, use the principle of Occam's razor.
What?
So what does Occam's razor mean? What is the smoking gun? All things being equal, simplest solution tends to be the best one. It happens to all athletes. It's called nature or father time. Simply put, the Penn superstars are just past their prime.
Age-wise, they shouldn't be.
What's Occam's razor?
Yeah, good. I'm glad. I don't know what it is either.
Simplest solution is the best one, according to...
Oh.
I've got to look that up.
The Kill a Chihuahua.
Tell me how to spell it first, and then I'll look it up.
O-C-C-A-M, apostrophe S, razor.
Killer Chihuahua is like the Beatles. You started off simple, singing Love, Love Me Do, and then all of a sudden they found LSD, and I don't understand anything they write.
There you go, Chihuahua. That accusation from Guy Junker. Mark emails the show.
Law of parsimony.
Oh, no. Don't get deep in
parsimony, New Jersey.
I'm in trance now.
Keep things simple, basically, I think is the...
Among competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. The application of the principle can be used to shift the burden of proof in discussion. I'm going to have to remember this.
Keep it simple. Let's keep it simple.
Next time I second guess Todd Haley, I'm going to make an Occam's razor reference. Thank you, Chihuahua.
Just by making an Occam razor's reference, you're violating Occam's razor.
That's true, actually. That's a good point you make. That's well said.
Brian from South Beach. Sid is Sid, guys, and I'm tired of it.
That's Occam's razor. Sid is Sid. There you go. Very simple.
Niemi is Niemi. I know people think he is still the glory boy and can't get rid of him, but this team needs a major change. I would trade Sid and keep Geno. Seems like the Penguins play better when Geno's in the lineup and Sid is not. Also, they could get better return for Crosby. It's not the first trade Sid email we've had this week.
No, it isn't. It's starting to become a little bit more of a thing, but they will not trade Sid while the team is up for sale.
Has any major...
That's true.
And they probably won't trade Malkin while the team is up for sale either.
What media member nationally wrote a trade Sid column? There was one, was it last year, or somebody wrote one, which got quite a stir. But I don't believe anybody locally has called for that yet.
No, because they'll be ostracized forever and won't be allowed in the locker room and have their credentials stripped.
Would they really? You think the reaction would be that negative?
Yes.
If you
from
went
over
to,
there?
Yes.
If yes.
you went to our Sports Talk blog or Inside Pittsburgh Sports and said, trade Sid right now.
All right, listen to these shooting percentages. His rookie year was 14. Second year, 14.4. 13.9 in the year they won the Cup, which was his lowest at that point. The year after they won the Cup, it went up to 17.1. And in 2010-11, it peaked at 19.9 shooting percentage. Mm. It had dropped then in 11 and 12 to 10.7. It's been 12.1, 13.9, 11.8 since. So,
and you can also argue, let me see those numbers again here. I'm going to look over your shoulder.
He hasn't taken a shot.
Well, this year he hadn't until game three. He did get a shot, I think, officially.
Not according to these stats. He has
remember this one. This was the strike-shortened season, too, the lockout-shortened season. So that's part of the reason why perhaps it was
19,
so high,
because
he didn't take as many shots.
But it is low. Oh, yeah, he's got four. He's 0 for 4. He's averaging one shot a game. I mean, that's...
He had three shots last night. Two blocked and one missed in 19-22. Sid did win 11 of 17 faceoffs last night.
So forget percentages for a second. Let's look at amount of shots.
Also was on the penalty kill last night. I don't think he's been that bad. He's just...
The last two games he's been all right. The first two games he was a ghost.
Yes.
It just says shooting percentages here. It doesn't have total shots in this listing.
But again, much like McCutchen in the playoffs, you're asked to do more when you are paid to do this much.
Speaking of that, we had a few tweets last night regarding Kutch is Kutch and Daniel Murphy is Daniel Murphy, and the difference between the two is stark right now. The Mets advanced to face the Cubs in the National League Championship Series. Was a pretty clutch performance from Daniel Murphy. There's no getting around that. Any takeaways from that game in terms of the Pirates and watching the Mets move on?
Well, as it relates directly to McCutchen, much like people like to do with Crosby and his numbers in the playoffs, the Crosby defenders of the wall, when you criticize what he has or hasn't done in the playoffs, say, oh, look, he's a point per game. Look how those points were gathered. You know, 4-2 losses and he's got an assist. You know, they compared, well, Taves and Kane were just 0.74 per game. Okay, well, they're getting a game-winning goal in a game seven or something like that. They're combining to get 4 points in a game seven as opposed to Sig getting two in a game six loss where they get eliminated. Just look how the points are gathered. Look beyond a little bit. And McCutchen, you can talk about his batting average and his inability to get RBI because nobody's on base in the postseason. But, you know, hit a home run then. You know, he came up with, what, runners on first and second and almost hit into a double play if Addison Russell doesn't bobble it. Jason Hayward homered against Jake Arrieta. You know, homer. You know?
Right.
Or a triple. Or steal third when the pitcher's not looking.
You can overanalyze the statistics of it. If you're talking about Sidney Crosby, I'm just going by watching him play. The guy used to dominate games and bring you out of your seat. He doesn't do that anymore.
Now, Daniel Murphy has Jonas Cespedes batting behind him. Is that a protector to Daniel Murphy, which gave him opportunities in last night's game to get pitches?
Sure, the Mets were 500 when they got Jonas Cespedes. He made all the difference in the world to where they are now. Absolutely, he's a part of that.
But I don't think that Jake Arrieta, a good pitcher, let alone mediocre pitchers, looked at Starling Marte and said, well, this is an easy out. He's not a true cleanup hitter, as Hurdle likes to say.
Right.
And he doesn't want to be a cleanup hitter either, I think, Marte. The Pirates are full of guys who want to make a lot of money but don't want to be cleanup hitters for some reason.
But you look at those guys coming into the batter's box, and it's not like those pitchers are falling asleep like it's Esrod.
I agree with that. I mean, Marte had a pretty good year, but I thought Marte would have a better year than he did. He sort of fizzled.
Well, that's perfectly fair, but I don't think – it's not like that Arrieta was on the mound saying, well, I'm just going to
pick and choose
my pitches with Andrew McCutchen because Starling Marte is coming up next and he's an easy out.
I agree with that. Cespedes this year split time with the Detroit and the Mets. 287 with the Mets.
He was good with the Mets when he came on board.
17 homers? Wow. Yeah. 17 homers in 57 games, is that right?
And not necessarily a friendly home run hitting park either.
The cover at the New York Post is You Metcha. Amazons, KO Dodgers, Cubs next.
Oh, the Amazons again?
The Amazons. They're back to being the Amazons, yeah. That's below the Lamar Odom scene popping pills on surveillance video footage at NewYorkPost.com.
Granted, I do agree with the people who were online on Twitter yesterday tweeting that Syndergaard should have stayed in the game for that second inning last night because he pitched the seventh. They took him out and they put Familia in to pitch the eighth and ninth.
Familia's damn good.
Yeah, two inning save, which you know obviously is pretty rare these days.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering what they're all.
And then he had a bat.
Because people were
crushing. That forced him to bat with a man on base.
Yes. People were crushing Collins as if he had lost the game already by putting Familia in. Like, the game was over.
Oh, he would have been
the Mets had lost.
Did lose it.
Like, it was past tense. The Mets have lost.
Now they're the Amazons?
Yeah, now they're the Amazons again. I'm wondering where all the tweets are about that.
Well, how about Greinke now? He gave up three runs yesterday. Is that a Cole-like performance? There are people saying Zach Greinke's not an ace because he gave up three runs in a playoff game over six innings.
That's my whole point when everybody was jumping on that ace term a week ago. Right.
I mean, it's not a bad performance. He struck out nine. He walked one. But
look, a guy wins 22 games, 20 games, 19 games. A lot of those are against average to below average teams. Once you get in the playoffs, you can't expect guys. I mean, that's why you have had over the years in World Series and playoffs or Super Bowls or whatever, guys come out of the woodwork to become household names that you don't expect.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what you do over the course of a long season can't expect it always to just be automatically duplicated when you're playing the best of the best.
I wonder if Dodgers fans are disappointed in Greinke the way we all felt about Cole. You expected better, right? Did you expected if you're a Dodger fan, Greinke to
pitch? How much of the game did you watch?
Shutout baseball. Not a ton. I was at the Pens game.
If you're a Dodgers fan and you thought your chances to advance to the NLCS was based on Zach Greinke pitching against Daniel Murphy, I think you would feel pretty good about yourself.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think they're probably pretty upset at him giving up that home run today.
Well, just 9 Ks in one walk, though. What was Cole in the 5 innings that he pitched?
He didn't have a ton of strikeouts, I don't think.
Here, I think I still got the scorecard.
He did kind of come back and battle. I mean, it's not like he wilted and was a head case.
You know, Greinke pitched into the 7th, Ken.
5 innings, 4 strikeouts, 1 walk.
Yeah, you know, Greinke had a better game than Gerrit Cole did.
He did.
Technically, that's a quality start.
Right.
At least.
Cole could have gone deeper, though. They pinch hit for him.
And the whole thing about the Pirate game, whether they would admit that in the locker room or not, was this unhittability of Jake Arrieta. And as soon as you give up one run in the first inning, there was this sense of panic. Oh, my God, we only got 9 at-bats against them. How are we going to get that run?
Yeah.
Well, I'll throw it at you, Ken. I'll take your question and throw it back at you here. If Gerrit Cole pitches into the 7th and then allows a solo homer to Kyle Schwarber to break a 2-2 tie, are we bagging on his performance as much, or is it?
No, it was getting him in the hole. I think you're right. It was poor early, but
that was
Murphy
a better start.
A
Zach Greinke had a better start. I don't really think it's all that fair of a comparison.
Oh, really? They gave up a run in the first inning, didn't they? Weren't they down 1-0?
Yeah, they're down 1-0, but it was
they came back and took the lead, 2-1. But that's not his doing. Greinke did win a game in the series too. He won game 2, so he already had established a little bit of. All right, he won a game for us. Same with Kershaw. They both won a game. He just couldn't win the second one. I don't know. I was just throwing it out there. I mean, I
don't think it's all that fair of a comparison because I think Greinke had a much better performance.
Okay. I'm not saying Cole had a decent one or a good one. I'm just I wanted to try to draw some parallels here. And actually, Tim, and you brought up the Pirates GM was on Brand X and had a couple of interesting things to say yesterday.
Yeah, including he doesn't think that the
he's going to sign Melanson.
Yeah, you know, the Melanson one. The fact that he said that
What did you say about Melanson? Because I did not hear this.
That $10 million is an awful lot for a closer.
So we, as we knew, everything we expected.
Yeah, and he also said it'd be hard to ask Walker or any free agent to be to move positions. He made it sound like it was a tough ask, more so than it would be their willingness to ask.
Yeah, well, especially when you've strained your relation with the guy for 2 years.
Hey, Neil, how you been? Give me the old chuck on the shoulder. How's life? How's Gibsonia? Hey, what do you think about moving to first this year, Neil?
We'll trade you by August, and then... But for 4 months, do something very uncomfortable.
Be a team player. And how about coming to Seven Springs and giving a speech to the
Children's
little,
Hospital.
Little sisters of Johnstown? Jason and the Berg, sportstalk at tripweb.com. Invisible Fence, brand morning sports report, and we're brought to you by Duffy's Beer. Jason says, back to the Pens, guys, I would like them to move Kunitz down to the third or the fourth line and have Sprong up on the top line with Crosby and Kessel. Let's see what this guy can do in his 9 games and then go from there. Kunitz is Kunitz. He's not top-line material anymore.
It's become our thing now. Everybody is everybody.
Kunitz, I was looking last night.
No, Kunitz is no longer Kunitz.
Yeah, that's actually part of the problem.
Well, he wasn't last year, too. Guy, you know I was pretty hard on him, and you said, let's wait because he has the foot thing, and you were right.
Yeah.
I don't think he's been noticeable that much. I was looking at the sabermetrics of hockey last night.
Warandice.com.
The one that I use is the behindthenet.ca.
If you want to take Occam's razor and do the opposite of it, it's waronice.com.
Yeah, well, it's tough. But I do like a few of these now. The simple one is just relative Corsi, which is...
Already sounds complicated.
Corsi just takes into account when you're on the ice how many shots your team gets as opposed to gives up.
Right.
Now, relative Corsi compares that with like when you're not on the ice, how your team is doing in shot volume, and it kind of... It's a... metric to give to kind of tell how much you're driving possession.
It's a metric to give perspective to the other metric.
Yes. Anyway, to get to the point, to Occam's razor it as best I can, yeah. Kunitz was the worst Penguin in terms of driving possession through 4 games, dead last, which is a little surprising to me. Nick Bonino was their best.
Which yeah, Bonino's been pretty good so far.
I haven't noticed him that much. He's just sort of... it's a third-line player, I guess, who I would have expected him, though, to be playing against top competition and to not show up in that capacity that much, where they would have control of the puck a lot. I'll see if it updated today.
Well, have you found them doing a lot of line matching so far?
Yeah, maybe not.
Especially with the first 2 games on the road?
No. Relative Corsi today, Bobby Farnham is worst. I think he played well last night, though. Kunitz elevated a little bit, and their best two players, Bonino's still up at the top.
Remember, I said since the middle of training camp that I think the best idea for them is, in a best-case scenario, they would have Dupuis healthy on one side of Bonino and Kunitz on the other, because that then means that Bennett or Sprong has become what they thought they would be when they took him, and it means that Perron is playing well.
Would you have no problem with Kunitz jumping down to 3 or 4? If they did that, I mean, is that, first of all, it's Sid and Kunitz. There's a perception that Sid would never allow that, right?
Right. This would be a harder coaching call.
Yeah, this would be hunting
than
the
putting
Neil Walker.
Scuds up in the press box.
Yeah, right.
Like you wanted to praise him for putting Scuds up in the press box. That's not that hard of a call to me. What's a hard call to me is, Sid, you're not playing in the right circle. Sid, we're taking Chris and we're putting him on the third line. You're going to make Sprong into a star. That's the hard call. Or, you know what, Sid, I know you thought you were getting Kessel. We think it's better with Gino. Hornquist is going back with you. We're going to put Kessel with Gino.
How long can Crosby not produce before he would be more open to change himself, do you think?
Great question.
You know?
I don't know. Is he feeling pressure to
make
Kessel a star already?
If he has 3 points after, like, 11 games, would he be like, please change lines for me, do something?
They had success with Kunitz and Hornquist last year on his line. So maybe he would love it. Maybe he'd say, yeah, it worked last year, I agree, let's go to it. Maybe he thinks he's got to feed Kessel all the time, and he's responsible for making this guy a 50-goal scorer, and it would take a burden off him. It would be a conversation I think they should have, if they haven't already.
Yeah, again, I don't think he has been feeding Kessel too much. I think the...
Well, the first 2 games he was.
I don't think he was. I think he was not getting his own shot enough. I didn't see forced passes. I didn't see overpassing. I didn't see a volume of, him with an opportunity to shoot, passing it up and giving it to Kessel instead. I saw an
inability. Didn't Kessel have 8 shots or something in the opener?
Ken, it wasn't because he was getting fed too much. It was because Sid was not creating his own shot. He wasn't creating the space that he normally does. When you see forced passes, we've seen Sid force passes before. Did you see a lot of those? Or did the passes to Kessel to give him those 8 shots look logical to you?
I saw Kessel shooting a lot. I didn't see Sid necessarily passing up open chances. I think you're right there, but it's the whole line seemed designed to get funnel things to Kessel, just in general. Or maybe that's just the way it worked out in game one. I don't know. That was just my feeling after game one. I don't know, Guy. What did you see there? I mean, was Sid not overpassing?
I've hardly watched them play. I've been on the road, and games haven't been available to me. So last night's the first time I really got a good look at him.
Yeah, last night was fine. Sid had some chances. Dan at Canisburg email. I wasn't a fan of the Pouncey contract extension when the Steelers gave it to him, guys. I'm even less of a fan of it now. Center is just not a position in football where you need to spend millions to have a championship club. Pouncey is a hell of a player. No doubt he helps any team he's on, but the backslide when he's not on the field is not big enough to justify his contract in a cap league. Do you guys think they should have extended him or reallocated that to different positions?
I didn't have that much of a problem with the extension. It's probably easier to find a pass-offable center than they give it credit for. They are so spooked about the center position because they've had such good ones, and in between when they haven't, it's looked bad.
Yeah.
You know, like when they had to go through that 1 year with Sean Mahan, when they had to go through that 1 year with Jim Sweeney, you know, when they've tried to bridge the gap for a season.
Fernando Velasco.
In between the great ones. Well, Velasco actually should have been something that taught them the other way because Velasco was good until he got hurt. And then Cody Wallace even came in and wasn't bad after that. But they've had moments where they've had centers that they thought they could just get by with for a year.
Yeah, and I mean, let's face it, the offensive line was the weakest link on this team for a while. Whether you're talking about center, tackle, guard, right side, left side, the overall grouping needed to get better to keep the one position where you do have to have a marquee guy, and that's quarterback. But already Ben Roethlisberger is missing games this year. They were looking at his sack totals to the point where they changed coordinators and tried to get him to change the way he played so he could play till he was 35, 37 years old. So I think the whole mentality of keeping a good offensive line intact regardless of position was there. So, no, I don't go back and look and say they shouldn't have done that.
Look at the Chargers with their offensive line. I know they have injured players, and maybe that's part of Dan's point. You can't have guys that are injury-prone and give them that kind of money, but look how bad Phillip Rivers was with three linemen that couldn't block. They couldn't win the game.
Yeah,
need a good line in this league. That is a fact.
And they were losing guys as the game went on at who the hell is that big 77 that came off the field? They're moving centers out to play guard, and they were a mess.
Now, Brady, I guess, gets by with it, right? Because he gets rid of the ball in under 2 seconds. But unless you're Tom Brady and can get rid of the football in under 2 seconds and be highly accurate and have that passing attack.
And he doesn't have a chump change up in front of him either.
Yeah.
Well, Solder was a first-round pick. You know,
he's out for the year. They're not going to miss him. They never do. They traded the guy last year, the guard, and they won the Super Bowl. Logan Mankins, right?
Logan Mankins, yeah.
I don't know. They seem different. But
no, when you bring that up with the Patriots, everybody argues it both ways. It's like, oh, these are good linemen. And then you say, oh, okay, well, so Brady's not that special about 2.2 getting it out of his hand in the Super Bowl every single time? No, it's Brady. You every time you bring up that argument about one hand washing the other, it's kind of like the Steelers with the secondary versus the pass rush. You know, you can't have one without the other. I mean, the Patriot offensive linemen are good at what they do, but Brady is what makes it work. You know, I think they're okay players, though. You know, they're smart. They don't make mistakes.
It is a unique position to be that high paid, I guess. I mean, he's one of the highest paid centers in the league. They did allocate a lot of money to an elite center. Le'Veon Bell had a record year last year, and that was a huge part of it.
His first season as a rookie helped transform that line into being a liability, into being a strength.
Right.
So, I don't think you overpay. I think if you've got a star, and I also don't think you can predict injuries. Injury prone, you know,
He had a body of work of injuries already, I guess, if you want to say that.
Sometimes you can say, well, the guy's had his share already. Maybe he'll stay healthy now. I don't know. I don't know how and he's had some bad luck at it, too, with his own team blocking guys into him. And I think it's awfully hard if you've got an all-star caliber player in any sport who's had some injuries and saying, I don't want to spend the money to keep this guy here. He gets hurt all the time.
How about this, though? The five highest paid centers in the league, pretty bad teams. Mike Pouncey, the Dolphins, number one. They stink. Rodney Hudson of the Raiders, second highest paid center in the league. And Marquise is third. The Vikings center, John Sullivan, is the fourth highest paid center. They stink. And the Browns with Alex Mack. So all the high paid centers are on teams that are middling to bad.
Well, Josh McCown had enough time to throw for 457 yards last week.
That's true. Okay. I'll give you that one. SportsTalk at tripweb.com. There's a parallel to that with hockey I want to bring up that Jonathan Bomboli ran past me last night.
Center's a little different position in that sport.
Well, yes, but it's actually related to that in terms of money spent and allocating dollars in the NHL. We'll do that, but we're going to bring Rob Rossi on for his Friday visit. Rossi and was over at the Pens game last night. He called it home. Said he felt back at home.
I'm not sure he didn't.
Not sure if he meant that.
No, he did not.
We'll ask him about that. How uneasy he felt over there with the 0-3 team, or was he walking around strutting his stuff? Also going to check in with the Arizona Cardinals and their beat reporter Kent Summers from AZ Central. We'll pick pork at noon. Penguins Roundtable show at 1. Josh Taylor has the day off. We got his picks emailed to us. So we'll mock those in addition to making our selections.
Not mocking anybody.
It's true, Josh is in first place. Rob Rossi next.
Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta, located on 6th Street in downtown Pittsburgh. Fast and free delivery. Give them a call at 412-281-7060. Lunch special starting at just $7.49 with selections including small grilled chicken salad, a bowl of soup, two cuts of pizza and a small garden salad, penne pasta, garlic bread, and a small salad. Half a hoagie and french fries, or half a hoagie and a can of pop. That's 412-281-7060. You can even order online. Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta in downtown Pittsburgh, and online at ilovegiovannis.com.